Well, do you still have that ominous feeling that something is about ready to happen? Hmm? We're going to have open lines for you for this entire hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. I'm George Norrie, and let's go to the phones. Open lines this hour. We'll pick it up by going to Tyler, Texas. Jim, you are up with us. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good. What's going on, Jimmy?
Oh, not much. I'm on my way home from work. I work night shift. I live in Tyler, but I work in Longview, Texas, and I'm on Highway 31 in between Tyler and Kilgore.
Okay.
On my way to work, a lot of times I see little crosses and things on the side of the road where people have, you know, had some accidents, things like that. And I've been a bit of a ghost hunter. I was wondering if you might be willing to conduct an experiment with the audience out there. I know there are a lot of people around the country that have different abilities. And if people could perhaps find Highway 31 on Google Earth or on a map somewhere, and to see if they could manifest a spirit or a ghost out here.
And just summon the thing up. Interesting. Let's kick that around.
Okay.
I will do that, and we'll see what happens. Speaking of seeing strange things, I saw 5 vultures today. I kid you not, flying around in Los Angeles. 5 of them. Now, I went online. They had red heads, and they were vultures. There's no doubt about that. But I think they're called turkey vultures. They originate in Mexico, and they're here in Southern California. And these things were huge. And, you know, a couple of them were perched on tree branches. The others were flying overhead. And I went out and got some binoculars and looked at them. And sure enough, they were turkey vultures. Go online, Google it, and definitely look for a picture. Strange-looking critters. Big birds. I wonder what they're looking for. Next up, we go to El Paso, Texas. Fernando, east of the Rockies. Good morning.
Good morning, George. I'd like to follow up with something that you were discussing with Bruce.
Sure.
Bruce Lipton. And something that never was made clear. People wanted to know. And he pointed out that once we understand how we live our lives controlled by our subconscious mind 95% of the time, and that our subconscious was programmed into us without our consent prior to the age of 6 or 7,
yeah,
and then we're stuck with it because it's hidden away and we don't realize what's in there. But they never did get around to pointing out some techniques to use to reprogram your subconscious and put these principles in his 2 books, The Biology of Belief and Spontaneous Evolution, put them into practice. And I would like to suggest a way to do it.
All right, go ahead. And you used this technique?
Yes.
Okay.
I did very successfully. And I kick myself frequently for not continuing with it now.
Why'd you stop?
I just got distracted and got away from it. I'm trying to get back to it now. But it was just almost miraculous. I started studying some of these principles and ideas. This was about 1966. And I had completely changed my life at that time. I'd been a real introvert up to that point, and I was working a job that was just paper shuffling and not dealing with people very often.
Reminds me of Milton in the movie Office Space.
Well, somewhere along there, a higher power kicked me in the butt.
Just all of a sudden, bang.
And it prompted me to just, on a spur of the moment, quit that job. With nothing in sight, a wife and 3 children.
My God, did you have any money in the bank?
No.
Whoa.
Well, I had a little bit.
Not enough, though.
And I got interested at that point. Just before I did that, I'd gotten interested in trading in the stock market. And so at that point, I took the money I had and I started trading on my own. Buying and selling. I was the day trader of that time.
All right. And what were you buying? What, penny stocks or just all kinds of things?
All kinds of things.
All right.
And I did that for about 5 years.
You must have been successful.
Yes. But the market just quit moving. It wouldn't go up and it wouldn't go down.
Yeah.
And I was making money both ways, going up and going down. And so I started to ask myself at that point, I've got to go to work. What can I do that will offer me certain benefits? Freedom to control my time and to be outdoors, out of an office,
mm-hmm.
and to set my own income, which I had been doing. And I immediately got an answer in my mind. It was commission sales. And I said, no, that's not me. I'm not that kind of a person. I can't twist people's arms.
You were the introvert.
Anyway, I kicked that around for a year, and it got real tight. And I finally said, all right. I searched and searched, and that's the only thing I could find that offered those benefits.
What kind of industry?
Well, it didn't matter. But I finally said, okay, I'll do it. I'll do whatever I have to do to succeed in that.
And were you still day trading?
Very little.
Okay, so you gave that up.
Very little. I had to start eating into my money to live on.
Yeah.
So once I made that promise to myself, I'll do anything I need to do, and I'll change. I don't want to change, but I will change. I know I'll have to change. And at that point, I started looking for commission jobs, straight commission.
No base salary?
No.
That's
no.
Gutsy, all by itself. Jeez.
Well, I went to an employment agency, and they had the same response you did. And I checked with them. I'd go to sit in the broker's office and watch the ticker tape in the morning. When the market closed, I'd go by the employment office and see what they had day after day. And the guy said, no, nothing, 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 nothing. And one day I walked in there, and the room full of desks was empty except for him. He was a kind of a supervisor. So I went and was checking with him again. He says, no, nothing, nothing. And when I turned around to leave, a lady was sitting at a desk. She had come in. She said, I couldn't help but overhear your conversation. She said, I just got a job here, and I wonder if you'd mind going and checking it out for us. She says, it doesn't sound too good. It's straight commission. Boy, my
Bingo.
Eyes perked up. My ears perked up. I said, yeah, I'll go check it. She says, well, it's selling visual products.
Okay.
She says, that's all we know. She says, I don't know what that is. Go interview, check it out, come back, and tell us what it's all about. I said, sure. I did. On my way home, I went and checked the people out, and I interviewed with them, and I took an aptitude test.
They liked you?
And then I went home, and when I got home, my wife, it was about 5 o'clock by then, my wife said, you got a phone call, and they want to know when you're ready to go to work.
Whoa, they offered you the job. You weren't even home yet.
Yeah. She says, they want you to come in first thing in the morning at 8 o'clock. And I said, okay, and I called them up and told them I'd be in. And I went in there, and I was hired. They said, we've been looking for you.
Did it work for you?
Well, I'd been studying these positive ideas and beliefs on the side with library books. And so I went in there, and they didn't tell me I was going to have to do public speaking to groups of people, because that was something I.
And you're the introvert, right? You're afraid of people.
Yes, I didn't talk to people except one at a time, and only if I had to. And they didn't tell me that at the job. They just.
You sound like Burl Ives, by the way.
Maybe we're long lost relatives.
You never know.
But they told me about the products that I would be selling and who I'd be selling them to and the whole thing. and they said, you're the one we're looking for. So I signed on with them.
How long did you stay with them?
7 years.
And did you do well?
I was their leading salesman.
Good for you. Good for you. There's a moral here somewhere.
I got into that. Well, I first remembered the moral was I told myself I'm willing to do whatever I have to do as long as it's legal and morally correct. And that was the approach I took.
Well, and it worked for you, Fernando. And, you know, that's pretty remarkable. Not a lot of people do that, but you somehow tapped into it. Let's take a few more calls, and we've got to take a break. We'll go to Ed in Mesa, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Good morning, George. This is really a pleasure. I am a longtime listener. I go back to Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell talking about government weather control for purposes of war.
That was a long time ago.
And it's taken me 3 years to get back in and talk to you.
Jeez.
And I wish I could have got to talk to Dr. Bruce Lipton. I think you ought to have him on at least once a week or once a month for the next 3 months until people completely understand and begin to use what he's saying. And, you know, he kept talking about communities, but I would rather he say neighborhoods. Because when I was growing up, even though everybody didn't have a phone, if you got in trouble as far as 8 blocks away from your home, even though your parents may not have a phone, when you got home, they were on his doorstep asking, what did you guys do?
They already knew.
It was so awesome. And we destroyed neighborhoods when Mom and Dad both had to go to work. But everything that the good doctor and his book writing partner said tonight needs to be instilled in the memories of every American, and we start living that way, because I did that back, clean back in the 60s when Dr. Norman Vincent Peale wrote The Power of Positive Thinking, and I started putting that into use in my own life, and it changed so much for the better when I actually used the information on a daily basis. It was incredible. I got to go from the United States overseas to a country I had been in before in the military and marry a woman who I've now been married to for 47 years. And I got that assignment within 3 weeks of putting into practice what Dr. Norman Vincent Peale taught in that book. And another thing, one of the problems is in school in those first 6 years, and a Russian, by the way, said that in the fields here in the United States in the 60s, you give me a child from birth to age 6, and I'll make him a communist or her a communist forever. And warned us that one day that Russia, without use of atomic weapons or anything else, would take over from within here in the United States. And we all laughed hearing him on television that night. And boy, it looks like we're heading in that direction. And the other thing is, and when we're going to school in those years, we're taught to memorize, to accept what we're told, and then obey without question when we get out of school. And we need to teach our children to think for themselves and make use of what is heard on your program and all the rest. I listen every night if I am home. You're on the air with me, and it is my great pleasure, and I hope that I can get through a little easier in the future.
You're very, very eloquent, and by the way, what you said is exactly how so many people are feeling nowadays as well. Good for you. Let's go to San Diego. Hello, Roger. Welcome to the program.
George. Good to talk with you again. I really enjoy your program.
Thank you, Roger.
I just wanted to tell you about a gentleman I know, because you were talking with Dr. Jerome Corsi at the beginning of the show there, and this fellow's in his 90s, he lives up in Bakersfield, and I call him the last of the wildcatters, but he still keeps his finger on the pulse of the oil industry, and he was telling me that all over Southern California, in areas where they've capped a lot of wells, and they've just got the stripper wells going, especially around Bakersfield, Wasco, Taft, Kettleman, farther south down in Long Beach and Signal Hill, and all those areas, Baldwin Hills, the pressure is coming back. The oil is returning, not in the amounts that they had, of course, in the 1920s, but that oil is coming back. And people who say the oil's gone, I agree with Dr. Corsi 100%. The oil is there. All we have to do is drill for it, George.
It's all over. I mean, I am so convinced that this planet makes it. It's part of the mantle. It's always been there.
It is. I'm certain just from what he's told me. And you know, especially up in Baldwin Hills where they had quite a subsidence up in that area. In fact, many, many years ago, they blamed the Baldwin Hills dam disaster maybe on too much oil pumping.
Yeah.
But that whole area, instead of subsiding, the ground is lifting. It's coming back from the pressure of the oil, and there's literally oceans of it right under our feet, George.
Well, you know what? Thomas Gold has always said that oil fields will replenish themselves in his initial research of abiotic oil, and nobody believed him then.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I just wish we had an administration that would, instead of making us import all this oil, we could drill for our own oil, especially like in areas off of Santa Barbara there. There's from Goleta all the way up to Gaviota, there's a 25-mile stretch where the oil just bubbles up into the ocean. And if we drilled for the oil, there'd be actually less pollution than what we've got now.
Absolutely. I mean, I'd like to see us with electric cars, because I'd like us to just get away from the foreign oil sources, even though it's all over the place. You know, I bet some of these wells in Texas have popped back up, but they're just not drilling for them. They're not checking. But, you know, maybe it's time just to go into the other alternative energies and then, you know, use oil for plastics and things like that. I mean, you're always going to need it. Florence, we go. Oregon. Mark, welcome to Coast. You're up with us. Hey, Mark, good morning.
Hey, good evening to you, George, and good morning to you also.
Thanks.
George, you know, you really attract my attention in particular with your question about people feeling the impending whatever out there.
I mean, I'm feeling something.
Well, got two pincers on the horizon of potential, and it looks to me at this point, George, like probable disaster. I don't mean to be a naysayer, but looking at it, it looks like, I think I kind of said pretty much the same when I spoke with you shortly ago, and we were talking about the same feeling of, with me, it's inevitability. When I look, if one is at least basically informed in the area of the deterioration of the economy, as Alex Jones says, the economy's in the emergency room, on life support, not getting adequate attention.
Absolutely. It's being left alone.
Yes, being allowed to die.
Yep.
And when it comes to the swine flu vaccinations, which, as I understand it, the vaccinations are going to be the vehicle by which the swine flu pandemic of epidemic proportions is going to be created, not just in the United States, but probably on a global basis. World Health Organization is calling it at 2 billion people, and they've had that estimate out there for, I guess, at least a month.
Isn't it bizarre that they have these numbers when we're not even close to that yet? What are they trying to do? I'm going to put you on hold, Mark. We'll come back and finish up with you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, none other than Nick Redfern joins us with his new work, Science Fiction Secrets from Government Files and the Paranormal. Fascinating moment as he looks at science fiction and movies, books, and also this effort to prepare all of us for a revelation that UFOs and aliens exist. Nick Redfern on our next Coast to Coast show. Okay, let's go back to Mark now in Florence, Oregon. Hey, Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, George. Oh, George, you know, as we had 9/11 2001. I think that, in my mind, it falls under the category in that instance of a political 9/11, perhaps a social 9/11 also. And then we seem to have two other 9/11s in the sense that by all evidence, they are just as contrived by someone. You call them the big boys. This 9/11/2001 was contrived and arranged to happen in order to fulfill the overall agenda. And this overall agenda doesn't have a place for us in the end of it.
We're not welcome. You know that.
There's that eugenics aspect, and they pursue it with the determination of Satan himself to destroy everything that's good on this planet. When I look at the what they have designed into these vaccinations as far as the ingredients go, George, without the economy imploding and collapsing, at least in this country, it would be enough. I think the economic part of it plays its role also, but that the vaccinations is what most people are really, they've at least heard one piece of information about it and probably cared enough to have it corroborated at this point in time. It's been going on for quite a while since this past April.
Well, you know, they're just getting them out now, and I can't believe that people are going to rush to get this when, to me, it hasn't been proven. They've been doing some testing, but have you seen any results of the testing? Have they said any? I haven't seen any.
What's happening there, George, as I understand it, with the testing that they've done, at least in this country, is that you have a whole different ingredient makeup of the trial vaccines that are being given in the trials here. I believe it's to pregnant women and to children.
It could be almost like a placebo.
Well, it is. Essentially, that's what it is. It doesn't have the oil-based adjuvants in it, nor does it have a live recombinant bird flu, swine flu, perhaps human flu virus.
The main vaccines will have.
Yes, and in the main vaccines, it's the horror story. And of the ingredients, especially the oil-based adjuvants, which caused so much damage to the Gulf War I troops and caused what we know of as the Gulf War syndrome, just the squalene. And they're planning to have, and this is like ringing across different sources that are virologists and medical doctors that I follow with this on a weekly basis, George, and that is that the oil-based adjuvant squalene is going to be in there quite a few times more, you know, quite a few 100% more, if not even greater than that, because I've heard some really strange figures about the amount of squalene that'll be contained in the mass vaccinations in this country. Now, there are different vectors and sectors throughout the world, as I understand it from the experts that I've listened to, which will receive their own individual vaccine ingredients.
Right. There are five companies dealing with the vaccines. Four of them have already apparently completed whatever they're supposed to do, and they're taking their vaccines to marketplace. Most of these are European countries, European companies that are doing this. But, you know, as I've always said, I'm not getting the vaccine. And I don't get it for the normal flu, and I'm definitely not going to get it for this one. And we'll just see what happens. I mean, there's probably, Mark, some paranoia involved in some of this. I think there are a lot of well-intentioned folks in the medical community. There's no doubt about that. But this one is just too rushed. You know, how can you come up with a vaccine for a mutation of a swine flu that technically hasn't even occurred yet? It just doesn't make sense. Let's take a few more calls. Jimmy in Brooklyn, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, George. You may have remembered me. I was on your show one time as a caller talking to, what's his name there, Patrick Buchanan.
Oh, yeah. That was about 2 years ago or so.
Right. I was saying how we didn't win the Cold War. In fact, I was saying we lost it. And I've been saying this since the Soviet Union supposedly collapsed. And I brought up the fact that the Soviet Union collapsed during the 20s. It was a totally controlled, fake collapse, but very convincing, and it lured the West's best intelligence agents into the Soviet Union, and they all got killed. The guy who put that together, Felix Dzerzhinsky, is the guy who founded what we know as the KGB. Felix Dzerzhinsky's birthday is 9/11. So I think that the Trade Center collapse was done to sort of make people see a new threat, to really look away from the ongoing Soviet threat, but it is still the Soviet hand in the Muslim glove. It's very important that people understand this. There's something in communist ideology and doctrine and history called the Popular Front, the United Front, the All People's Front. That's where different groups led by Marxists are pulled together to make a mass movement. I call that Afro-Leninist, Enviro-Leninist, Christo-Leninist, that's liberation theology, Islam-Leninist, Homo-Leninist, Femi-Leninist, and that is today the modern Democrat Party. So the Marxists, in their own writings in the Soviet Union and American Communist Party, talk about the peaceful transition to world socialism through elections, and that they're going to get the power and machinery of the state and then turn us into a Marxist state. So that's going on. At the same time, the world communist movement is getting control of the minerals and the oil that the West needs, and the Enviro-Leninist, set up by the Marxists, deny us our own ability to develop our own energy here.
Well, look at the signs, too. States losing sovereignty, Federal Reserve taking control of everything, and if they have their way, they will be able to literally come in and take over ma-and-pa type stores as well. If all this stuff is passed, the Federal Reserve will have the right to step in if they don't think these companies are doing the right thing and take them over. And it's just, it's truly unbelievable. And you're absolutely right, Jimmy. It is old Soviet Union. Now, a lot of people don't see that, but it's right out there. Let's go to West Hartford, Connecticut. It's you, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi,
hi.
Bill. Hi, Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. George, I wanted to talk to you about what you talked about at the bottom of the last hour into the beginning of the bottom of this hour, of what many people are feeling and what I fear may happen, what may be the negative thing on the horizon. And it's not so much the swine flu, which you talked about, number one. Number two, it's not so much the economy, but it is the economy ultimately. But it's not just that. It involves one word. I'll just say the one word and then I'll form a question to have you comment on it. Iran. And what I'm talking about specifically is I fear between now and the end of this year or at the latest beginning of next year, 2010, Israel going ahead alone and attacking Iran. And what bothers me is the aftermath, because Iran's not going to roll over and play dead. I think, number one, they'll block the Straits of Hormuz, and or number two, bomb the oil fields and other Arab countries in Saudi Arabia, et cetera, et cetera. And if oil would go to $20 a gallon, if gasoline were to be that high, $20 a gallon, whether oil is abiotic or not, think about that would do to what you talked about, the economy right now being on life support. You add $20 a gallon, that much per gallon inflation to the mix of where the economy is now. That's why I say it is the economy, but it's also what I fear Israel is going to do. I don't think Barack Obama would bomb Iran. I'm against bombing Iran. We should negotiate. But I really fear Israel because of the existential fears of Iran's nuclear weaponry that they're on the process of getting will do that. I don't think they should do it either. I would want Israel to not bomb Iran, but I fear they'll do that. And the aftermath of that, the outcome of that will be far worse than what's going on now, approaching the possibility of World War III, at least, if not maybe that happening. Could you comment on this?
Well, you might be right about that. In addition to add another caveat to all of this, and that's Venezuela now picking up missiles and tanks from Russia. That I don't like at all. There's so many people out there that just don't like us. They seem to be trying to encircle us, and that's a very dangerous situation. I talked 6 months ago on this show that I thought that there would be some armed conflict with Iran. I'm surprised that it hasn't happened yet. Jerry Corsi, who has covered the Iranian situation more than most, he is surprised that nothing has happened yet. But maybe that is that feeling that of impending doom. Maybe it's that. I don't know. Rosenberg, Oregon, we go. Al, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Al.
Hello there. How are you?
Okay.
Wanted to go back to taking control of your own life, basically, and making changes that you wouldn't believe were possible. Real briefly,
yeah.
The first 4 years of life were pretty good, and then I had a brother died on Christmas Day.
Oh, my.
And I made 4-year-old survival decisions, that I've been in recovery from ever since. By the time I was 30, I had moved back into the woods. I was living in a shack, and I had basically turned my back on humanity, and I was so... I affectionately referred myself at that point in my life as an ingrown toenail.
But did you find yourself there?
Well, what happened was I was fighting fires in the summer and bumped into a guy one night shift, and he kept my name and number, and he called me up, and he called me in the middle of winter, shared a dream with me, and I called my father up, told him a little bit about what I was doing. He says, "That'll never work for you. You got to talk to people. If I saw somebody coming down the street, I'd cross the street so I wouldn't have to talk to them, or go back home so I wouldn't have to talk to them."
Jeez.
If the dream's big enough, the facts don't count. You just reach into yourself, and I turned 25 years of going in one direction around almost overnight.
How'd you do it?
I made a decision, just like that fellow was talking about earlier, about the one that was going into commission sales. And I made a decision inside me. I got a hold of some probably the same books that he did. I studied, and I stood out of my shell, and I've spoken before 10,000 people. I've stood on stages and talked to thousands.
Good for you. That's remarkable.
with not a single butterfly.
I love it. I love it.
It's doable.
Yep, it sure is.
And I've had a good life until 2 years ago. The government made a decision back in Washington that it had a direct impact. I went down about 90% in income.
Oh, you know what? Knowing you, you'll probably fight right back again.
Well, I got some ideas, yeah.
You'll do it. All right, Al. Take care.
You betcha.
Let's go to Houston, Texas. Chuck, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Chuck. Thank you.
But this is I'm a first-time caller. Out of Houston, and I just wanted to, I'm trying to change the subject on you a little bit, but I'm going to talk to you about an orb experience that I had.
Orb, okay.
And I was doing a little night security work in the construction business, and everything shut down here, but I was watching a construction site one night at a Montero Sport I was sitting in, and I had my door open, all the windows down, letting the breeze blow through, and from underneath my car, I had the door open, and I was kind of leaning, cocked in the seat. And I noticed a little glow from underneath, and I looked down. And this little thing came up and kind of circled around below my steering wheel. It came up pretty much where the hinges are from under the car, right in that little corner.
Yeah.
And it got in under the dash and kind of moved around real slow and everything, and it was not in any specific motion or anything, and it came up, and it stopped right in front of my AC vent, right out where my blinker is on my car. And when it stopped, it was flat. It was a real bright gold looking color as it was moving around underneath above my feet and under my dash. But when it stopped in front of the AC vent, it was flat like a stamp, and if you take your index finger and connect it with your thumb and you make a circle, it's about that size.
Jeez.
And this thing is rectangle shape, and it had, I reached over and grabbed my reading glasses that I had, put them on, and I stared at this thing.
Did it look solid, Chuck, or just like a light?
No, it's transparent, and what it is, there were tubes in this thing. An example would be you would have seven small tubes going vertical, and horizontal you would have, say, 9 or 10 of them. And, I stared at this thing for about 2 minutes. I put my hand out underneath it because I had heard people say they had seen them and touched them and it shocked and everything. I let this thing, I couldn't feel anything. I put it on top. I put my the top of my hand underneath it and let it just sit on it. And I'm looking at this, and the tubes, you can see energy going through them. And they're hollow tubes. You can look straight through this thing.
Did it look like this was a power source thing?
You don't think I'm nuts, but the way it left, it is some kind of power source. But the way it left, once I sat there and kept watching it, finally I got bored with it. I won't say bored with it, but I was just, I didn't have a camera, didn't have anything I could take a picture of, and I was holding my hand there. And if you take a piece of paper, it's flat, just like a piece of paper, but you can see through the tubes. And at the end of the tubes, there's kind of like little bitty flames shooting out of it.
Jeez.
And they were kind of moving.
It was like a little tiny craft of some sort.
Yeah, well, you may want to call it that. I really don't know what it was. But the way it left and the way you see it as an orb, if you hold a piece of paper up in front of you, the top left corner of it bent over, and it started circling, and not in a regular motion. It, as the corner turned, it started circling and moving over to the left about 2 or 3 inches, and then it would go to the right, and then it would go up and down. But it was going faster, and as you took the top corner and you bent it over, as it got tighter in cylinder, the thing was spinning faster until all you saw was the glow. All you saw was the gold light, and it whipped up in between my door over the top of the car, and I stuck my head out and looked, and I couldn't see it. But anyway, I'm bringing it up to you.
That is amazing. That's,
I'm not,
to me, you know, Chuck, it sounds like a miniature craft of some sort. I mean, size, they could be any size. It's all relative, isn't it? Robert in Albany, Georgia. Robert, we only have about a minute left. Will that do you?
It might, but let me just say thank you, George, and your staff. Y'all all do an excellent job. I may not agree You're with welcome. Every opinion y'all have on there, but at least there's
Nor should you, by the way.
But it is wonderful to have a forum for people to reach such a broad audience with their ideas. And thank y'all for that.
All right. Well, thank you, Robert, and that's going to eat up our time. So we'll try to get you in on another day for sure. Don't forget Fridays, of course. Always open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. Next program, Nick Redfern joins us. He's got a remarkable new workout. He's a British ufologist. He's a cryptozoologist. And he's going to be discussing things that will just knock your socks off, assuming that you wear socks. You never know. If you need to email me, George@coasttocoastam.com, and please participate in our campaign to sponsor 250 children for Children's International. You can find that information at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.